So I call the meeting of the Prepaid Funeral Guarantee Fund Advisory Council to order. Time is 1:32. We have all members present, including Ms. Biggs, and the newest member. We appreciate you being here, as we appreciate everybody being here. We, just to let you know that this is a public meeting. It is being streamed, is the correct word, right? So who knows who's watching us? So, we have to be...
Probably no one.
Well, I'm sure there's a big audience, so... So the meeting's been called to order. First item of business would be to approve the minutes of May 18 and also of November 9. The minutes start on page 1 and page 2 and page 3. Anybody have any corrections there to the minutes? Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Motion second. Rebecca, you have a second?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Hi.
I didn't know if Amy should make a second since she didn't know anything about the minutes. So a motion by Wallace and a second by Rebecca. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. Then we go to item B, the discussion of the activity of the fund's investment officer report. And Jesse, I believe that's you.
Yes, sir. So I will be discussing the guarantee fund activity for both the trust funded and insurance funded accounts. And they basically cover the dates of March 1st, 2017 to February 28th, 2018. Sorry, didn't get that. Okay, so can you hear me? Okay, so again, we're covering the 12 months of March 1st, 2017 to February 28th, 2018. First page there on page 4 is the recap for the 12 months for the trust funded activity. I want to go ahead and explain a little bit of what we're doing here. So everything, starting with that column, guarantee fund subtotal there, and to the left of that is true guarantee fund activity. Everything under that column, seized funds and restitution, that is exactly what that the heading is. It's not anything related to the guarantee fund or assessments that we collect from there. The guarantee funds are administered under the 154 of the Texas Finance Code, and we do have a trust-funded account and an insurance-funded account. The trust-funded was established back in 1987, and the insurance one was established on September 1st, 2019. Both of them are required to assess a dollar until the fund reaches $1 million. This trust-funded account, as you can see, has over $1 million. There has not been any assessments for many years now. Under those first four columns, what we're going to talk about, the first one you can see is trustee fees, interest earned. And under the guarantee fund deposits columns, we're going to have, Russell's going to talk about items 18, 19, 22, and 23. Those are all claims under related to Tom G. Walker, and he'll talk about that in section C. The other items in there are, there was the first one under 17. It was insurance assessments that we collected that were deposited in this account in error. This is the actual withdrawal where we transfer that to the insurance funded account, okay? Item 20 is, as you can see, it's travel reimbursement. And item 21, there's actually three of them. That's where we had back in at the last meeting, if you recall, we talked about El Paso Mission, which was a file that we claim actually against the guarantee fund related to a funeral home that was canceling contracts fraudulently and not forwarding those funds to the consumers. We made a claim at that time of $25,000. You can refer to Section 21, $25,943.25. These are actual amounts that we received after the claim. One of them had to do with the settlement with the depository. The other one had to do with when we issued some of these restitution checks to consumers, they came back undelivered. So we went ahead and offset that the original claim. So these are the offsetting claims or the offsetting entries to those to that original claim. And again, this was something we talked about at the last meeting. So aside from that, that's really the items that we have here that are truly related to guarantee fund activity. Like I said, everything on the right hand side, basically under the seized and restitution payable, those are so anything related to potentially illegal contracts or any funds like that, we go ahead and we deposit into this account, but we account for it separately. Okay, so we hold these funds until we can identify, you know, the consumers that are owed the money of restitution. We process it at that time, but this is just the activity where we put it in there and withdraw it. We'll hold it until we know how to process them. On pages 6 through 9, okay, that's the quarterly reports that I and Stephanie producing review. So every quarter we do a recap of the activity for these for the funds, and we produce this report here. And what we do then at that point, we sign them, and it goes into the, also is reported to the Finance Commission as part of the, when we have those meetings. You will notice that the funds are mainly they're in the safekeeping, Texas Treasury safekeeping, and we also have some CDs and money market accounts. Back in, I believe, at November 20, let me see, that we had a meeting back, let me see.
November 9?
Yes, sir. Yes, that's correct. And we decided to go ahead and try to get better rates at the time, and that's where the CDs are. We have several CDs on there. You will notice that as of 2019, the last on page 9, this is the most recent quarterly report that ties back to the actual activity there. Okay, 25% approximately is in the safekeeping, and about 18 to 20% are in 3 different CDs and 1 money market account. And you will have there on that under the maturity date, you have the corresponding maturity rates, the interest rates, and the names of the banks and so forth, and the activity that comes up is for that quarter, okay? Does anybody have any questions on the trust-funded activity reports? No?
Well, could you kind of tell, give them a little overview about how we go about getting the CDs and what the process is, just a little briefly?
So when the CDs mature, we actually have a procedure for that. When the CDs mature, what we do, we contact our Bank and Trust Division, B&T area. We get one of the analysts to provide the annualized deposit cost ratios for from the most recent quarterly uniform bank performance report. So we'll get rates at that point.
Kind of average rates.
Right, exactly. Average rates. That's correct.
Portfolio.
Yes, sir. So at that point, we'll sort them through the higher rates there. We'll contact the banks. We'll get 12-month or depending on, typically it's a 12-month CD rate. We'll contact them, and then we'll get, we'll select the highest bank, or we'll identify the highest bank, and then we'll contact them and confirm that they want the money, because some of them actually may or may not want the money. We experienced that in the past. So once we do, well then, if we start the application process, opening an account with them, and ultimately transfer the funds over there to them. And that's done every time the CDs mature. Most of them actually mature at the beginning of the year, as you will notice by the maturity dates, but then we'll go through that process.
We use the banks that we regulate.
That's correct. Yes. Yes, sir.
And why is the amount at $240,000, Jesse?
To keep it under the FDIC coverage, $250,000.
So it's always insured.
Yes, sir. Sorry.
And I do want to just make you aware, as you can see, the rates are becoming more and more competitive with the Texas Treasury. When we first started, there was a big difference. Because what happens is this is a lot of additional work on ours to get these CDs. In fact, I have to give our CD, our Social Security numbers and to do it. And it used to be worth it through the spread difference. They're tightening up, and we'll continue to look at it because our goal is to get the best rates for the fund. But as they get closer and closer, we'll just have to continue to relook at that.
Right, because if we open a CD, like whoever's the signer on that CD then, which is employees, they still have to record all of our personal information, and we have to vet it personally. So it's sort of it's just different having all of our personal information out of different banks looking like we have accounts.
Yeah, it's getting harder and harder. I don't know if y'all got to open up a recent account, but it's tough.
Yeah, and they want our driver's license, they want everything. So if the rates get much closer, we'll probably just go back and keep more of it at the Treasury safekeeping.
Right.
So on that, Amy, or anything else, if you have any questions, feel free to ask.
Right.
Obviously, anybody else does. So it's,
right.
Because we try to keep it going, but we don't want to go over something that you're not sure.
Right. That's
about.
Correct. So that on page 9, that's the activity for the trust funded activity. Okay. Page 10 and the following four pages is for the insurance funded account. Again, the same time period, March 1st, 2017 through February 28, 2018. This, you'll notice, this is more of a, there's not much activity on this one. This is, again, once it reaches $1 million, we'll go ahead and stop making assessments. Right now, we are collecting $1 per contract, and that's collected when the insurance-funded permit holder submits their annual report. They report the new contracts. They submit that check along with the annual report, and we deposit it into this account. Just kind of real quick, the annual reports are due March 1st of each year. So sometimes the deposits, and since this ends on February 28th, the deposits are usually split into two, okay? So for 2017, the 550 and the 2149 are actually related to 2017 activity. I'm talking on page 10 right now. And the remainder is going to be deposited in March, which will be covered at the next meeting. The next meeting you will see a deposit of $45,695. So a total of $67,794 was reported to us as new contracts for 2017 from our insurance funded contracts, permit holders. And I went ahead and just did a quick comparison, and I did just in 2016, they reported $71,731. So it is a slight decrease of approximately $4,000, okay? That's just spread across all the permit holders, insurance permit holders. And I went for 2015, 2016, and 2017. It's an average of 70,000 contracts that are reported to us. So approximately 7 more years before we reach $1 million. Okay, that's based on what they report to us. So going back to page 10, that is again the activity for this account, and the following four pages again are the quarterly reports that we produce. So I basically go back and reconcile the account statement. As you can see, we do have about half the money in the Treasury safekeeping, and we do have one CD that's about to expire here in a couple of months or so. But you will notice that every time I reconcile the accounts, make sure all the deposits are properly deposited. Producer reports. Stephanie looks at them and reviews them, and we provide that as well to the Finance Commission. So that's
how many contracts did you say?
Contracts? Actually, I do have.
Let me clarify that those were the brand
new contracts. New contracts.
And I do have some other numbers total outstanding, but that's just the new business
right.
for that 1 year.
Yeah. We do have that information as well, but I think Russell, you're going to go that or?
Oh, we can discuss
okay.
that after.
Okay. All right. After this, we can discuss it. So any questions on the insurance funded activity that I just went over, any of the trust funded? Okay.
And I'd just like to clarify, I know we've talked about this previous, the insurance-funded guarantee fund, how it was created, because there is a separate insurance guarantee fund for your State Farm insurance policies and such to make them whole. This, in essence, will supplement to ensure we can find a funeral provider in case one goes under to get the prepaid funeral contracts honored. Fortunately, as you see, we've had no activity, and I hope we never have any activity, but it's there in case, so we can say all of them are guaranteed for new sales, that consumers are protected.
Okay. And just to answer your question, Rebecca, we, as based on the numbers that reported to us as of 2017, insurance funded, there's about 615,677 contracts with about $3.1 billion in in-force amount, okay? And the trust funded, it's 351,000 approximately contracts with about $913 million. So for a combined $4.1 billion for both insurance and trust funded, okay?
And one last thing to clarify, when we say in-force too, it's not a dollar-for-dollar comparison like a trust. It is if you get insured and you make two or three payments and you bought a $10,000 contract, you're in force for $10,000. But it's still a significant amount of money on deposit, but it's just when you compare dollars to dollars. And a trust is actual dollar-for-dollar. I just wanted to think that.
Okay. Any other questions?
Okay. Do I hear a motion to approve the activity of the funds and investment officer report for the period March 1, 2017 to February 28, 2018? Motion by Ms. Beggs is our second.
Second
by Mr. Jones. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. And let's go to item C. The claims related to Tom G. Walker Funeral Home.
Yes, sir.
Did you know that?
Russell will take that topic. And
identify yourself for the record.
Russell Reese, Director of Special Audits. We'll discuss the ratified claims on Section C. As we talked previously, too, this is probably one of the first meetings I've had where we only had one funeral home claims related to that, and I'm knocking on wood because that's good. It's a good thing. The claims have gone down as well. But with that, Mr. Walker has been a repeat offender as far as every meeting, I think going back 3 to 4, we've talked about Mr. Walker's funeral home. Now, that'll begin on page 15 and goes all the way to 37. We'll talk with Mr. Walker had a total of 5 claims totaling $24,671.60, all related to the Walker Funeral Home in Coleman, Texas. Now on page 15 will be the first one that occurred on March 16, 2017. And again, to give you a little background on the Walker's Funeral Home, this, I think, was initially discussed in May 14, 2014. We actually talked about that one way back then. Periodically, and you would think every individual would come forward by now, but what happens is sometimes they'd move out of the city, they could be living somewhere else, they didn't even know the funeral home's closed, and all of a sudden they go back to find it and it's closed, and then they call us to say what happened. So anyway, with that, on page 15 gives you an overview, and at the time we took some action, we then found out Mr. Walker passed away subsequently many years ago. Ms. Walker, who we tried to initially make claims against the estate of, when we contacted the attorney for them, he said, pretty much good luck, there's no money there, so you're not going to get any funds from the estate. So at that time, we were challenged, and luckily, though, they had a permit, and the guarantee fund paid the claims for these consumers. Since that time, in March, we had 2 claims on page 16, and you'll see it's a pretty much husband and wife, the Smith and a Paul Smith. Each individual claim on that was $37,26.90 each on page 16. Then on page 17 is our letter to Connie Smith advising her what happened and what we're doing, and pretty much telling our Stephen's Funeral Home in town, will agree to honor that contract, even though they were not obligated to, once we refunded the money, they could go to that funeral home and they would back and write it at yesterday's prices. So we actually were able, through the guaranteed fund, to make some claims and refunded the money to the Smiths if they would so choose to go to the Stevens funeral home to rewrite that contract and get their funeral covered, which is positive because, in essence, that Stevens funeral had no obligation to do that. On page 19 is the actual contract of the goods and services showing the total price of $4,141 on page 19. Those are the goods and services that they purchased at the time. On page 20, you'll see a date of April 2007 is when Tom Walker still had an active permit. And then also on the payment terms, you'll reflect one payment for $4,141, and it was paid in full. So it clearly indicated the consumer did pay for that contract and the funds were collected by Walker Funeral Home. On 21 would be a contract copy of Paul Smith, again, in showing $4,141 for the goods and services. Page 22 will also show the actual one payment for $4,141, showing it paid in full on April 20th, 2007, and the proper signatures were on the contract forms. That's the first claim related to Tom G. Walker. Now on page 23 is the second claim, and that was dated April 4th, 2017. I'm not going to go into the detail again because it's the same situation where we were on Mr. Walker before, but I will show you on 24 that it was for $6,300. And the critical nature of that is the guarantee fund previously had allowed the commissioner under $6,500. As long as all the paperwork was there and processed correctly, we could actually then get the guarantee fund reimbursed, and then y'all would ratify it. If the claim is over $6,500, we cannot do that without having a meeting to get approval from the council. So I just wanted to point that out. Also in 24, I will say, and the paragraph under Alcorn Funeral Home, the last sentence states the contracts were awarded to Funeral Agency, Inc. with Stevens Funeral Home, Coleman, Texas, because Walker did have some legitimate contracts. Able to seize it. They had some good ones, then they had some ones not reported ones that we're paying the claims for. Mm-hmm. For the contracts that were sold and were accounted for correctly, Alcorn Funeral Home subsequently took over that business from Walker's, but of course he didn't buy the unfunded liability of those illegally contracts. So at the time he tried it, he gave it a whirl, wasn't able to make it, and then the funeral home actually then physically closed. The whole funeral home closed. We then had to issue a cease and desist many years ago to take over the good contracts and then award them out. Funeral Agency, Inc. Was the one that bid on it, was able to get the contracts with Stevens Funeral Home as being the provider for those legitimate ones that we seized. Okay. That was on page 24. 25 is actually a letter drafted from our program specialist, Rebecca Angel McCready, advising Mr. Jenkins of the same situation, that we were able to refund the money, and also, if he so choose, he could go to Stevens Funeral Home and they agreed to honor the contract at yesterday's prices. So that's a letter to them. 26 will show also the contract from Floyd Jenkins, showing $7,000 for the contract. Also, he paid on page 27, one payment for $7,000 paid in full in December 2005. But I want to point out, as indicated on the previous page, which would have been when I first started talking on 24, it was $6,300. I should have said this earlier, because funeral homes are up, they can keep the 10% retainage. So every contract is allowed to the 10%, and we deduct that from what the cancellation benefit, like any normal prepaid funeral contract. So therefore, with the retainage being withdrawn, it was $6,300. And each one of these are the same processes. Now, the third related to Tom Walker is on page 28, dated May 2nd, 2017. Then on page 29 will be the recap of the claim, and it will show the individual's name. Last name is Sprinkles. Same thing, see the contract amount $68,180, but we had net claim of $6,136.20. Also stating it's going to be refunded to the consumer, go to Stevens Funeral Home if so choose, and rewrite that contract. The backup for that claim will be on 31. We'll show the contract amount, individual consumer's name, the date initialed by that consumer, 2005. And then page 32 is a continuation of that same contract, showing again one payment, $6,818, paid in full, and the date. And again, the letter to the consumer, kind of a lot of order here, was on page 30. Again, the consumer advising that the consumer can go to Stevens Funeral Home if they so choose, and that Stevens Funeral Home would honor the contract and rewrite it under FAI's insurance contract. And one last one. Again, Tom Walker. I will make a note. It's, you see the date September 22nd, 2017 on page 33. Since that date, we've had no more Tom Walker.
I just changed it,
but that's 6 months, and maybe that, but then again, any consumer, though, just for the guarantee money, if they come back another year or two and they were written under that time period, we're obligated to process that claim as long as they have all the paperwork, so the consumer will be protected. But hopefully someday that the consumers will already have all come forward. But on page 33, I do want to make one note on page 33 toward the paragraph from the bottom. We attempted one last time to reach out, one last time on September 22nd to contact the attorney of the estate just to assure if something happened or maybe a lot of money came in. We had no idea, but again, he indicated the estate was depleted, bankrupt, and he didn't get paid. So there's no purpose of us making a demand trying to collect them. That's on 33. Page 34 will show the actual dollar amount again. The net claim, $4,781.60, but the contract amount is $5,312.95. The backup will be on page 36. You'll see the total contract price. Page 37, again, will show a paid in full, one payment, $5,312.90. And then the letter to the consumer with the same information advising them was on page 35, telling the same thing. As you can see here, there's a theme. Every one of these were paid in full. And what happens, unfortunately, generally, if you're making payments, they're more willing to put it correctly. But if you get the, the $5,000, $6,000, $8,000 cash up front, unfortunately, we have found generally that's sometimes where the money goes and gets averted. But each one of all of these were paid in full. With that, that will take us through. See, I don't have anything else. Do you have any particular questions related to that recap?
So, Russell, those claims have already been paid, and so the council needs to ratify these for the record. Is that correct?
That is correct, sir.
All right, so we've heard the discussion by Russell. Is there a motion to ratify the claims related to Tom G. Walker Funeral Home as presented?
So moved.
Have a motion by Mr. Jones.
Second.
Second by Ms. Biggs. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion carries. Thank you. So next we have item D. Jesse.
Yes, sir. I will be discussing Administrative Memorandum 2016. This policy governs the maintenance of the guarantee fund that I discussed earlier. It's both the insurance and trust funded. One thing, this council is not subject to the requirements of the Public Funds Investment Act, but we definitely try to follow it as much as we can. Last time we met in November of 17 is when we had a lot of changes to try to mirror some of those changes to the Public Funds Investment Act. Okay, so those were all made in November. However, we are required to review it annually, and since we're not knowing if we're going to meet in November, typically we meet once a year, which is every May. So we're doing this just to make sure that we review it and analyze it and meet that one-year annual review. You will notice that pages 38 to 46 are the redline version, and 47 through 55 is the final, well, the draft of the final policy. There were not any changes. All of the changes are on page 38, which basically we're updating the date that this policy is reviewed. We're making some small changes in the second paragraph to make that notation and basically, you know, make it known that we met, we discussed it, and, you know, these are the proposed changes. Now, these are the proposed changes that we had. Well, we didn't see any changes, basically. We went through it, and I didn't identify anything. So we're proposing that all we do is, well, that we update the dates, make these slight changes, and hopefully approve it, and then we'll do it next time we meet again. We'll review it again and see if there's any other changes that are required at that time.
Let me just add, realistically, like last time you met, there were changes to it because the legislature changed the Public Fund Investment Act. So every other May at the end of session, then we have to go through and say, okay, what was changed to the Public Funds Investment Act that would affect us, and what should we put in our policy? And the policy used to be only updated every 2 years after a session, which really made sense. And then Jesse and I have to go to Public Funds Investment Act officer training, and in the training they said your policies should really be reviewed every year. So I guess for like large municipalities there may be changes in really what they want to invest in, but for us it's just not as important. But because it was, you know, a new requirement, that's why we had to change it to annual last time, and that's why we're bringing it back, because it almost looks like busy work, but it is required. But we didn't have anything that we saw that needed to be changed.
Yeah. Thank you, Stephanie. Yes. Any comments, questions?
So are we, is the council reapproving?
Yes.
Reapproving, is that the right term? Or are we just approving the modified memorandum?
I think we're reapproving because it has to be approved every year.
Okay. All right, so do I hear a motion that the council reapprove the administrative memorandum 216?
Aye.
Motion by Ms. Motley. Second. Second. Ms. Biggs, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Like sign. Motion carries. So thank you for that. And then on item E, who's going to take that?
Commissioner Russell Reese, Director of Special Ed, will take that, and I will discuss a little bit about the there's no more voting items, so, you know, yeah. This is more.
We were running out of voters.
But with that, to be transparent, we want to make sure we share with you, because as everyone thinks we audit everyone, we do get audited ourselves, which is good, to ensure that we're doing things correctly. And you'll find on page 56 through 69, we've included for your benefit the internal audit prepared by Garza Audit Firm that actually audits us. We get prepaid funeral contract audit, the bank trust division, everything that we do, there are internal auditors at who perform the audits. And with that, it was time for our new audit. I think the last exam audit I saw was in 2012 of the prepaid funeral guarantee fund. So now it is 2018. I do not want to spend much time at all for you, but I will. It's a really good reading to me to give you the background of the Department of Banking, what we regulate, how the guarantee fund kind of works, and certain things that you may or may not have been informed before. But I will not sit here and read the whole report to you. In fact, most of the issues that we discussed have already been previously touched base on, and I guess I will throw it out to y'all. If y'all have any particular questions related to the audit, I will make a note, and I'm going to toot our horn a little bit. On page 69, I will point you to that, and it says we had no findings, which is,
you know, I kept looking for that.
That's what, just in case, for everyone present, page 69, that we had no. Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, no,
which is good, because
I looked behind there and
Well, what I'll add is it was a, in the audit, they looked at the policies and procedures to make sure that we were following the policies and procedures we had, like how we process claims, how we reconcile the fund, how the funds were invested. They took the our investment policy to make sure we were following our own investment policy. And so really, they looked at almost those quarterly reports. They looked at all the activity and the data behind every single one of those to make sure that we were recording it properly. And they looked at all the bank statements to make sure there weren't, you know, that all the withdrawals and deposits were done properly. So it was a financial audit, but then also a procedural audit as well to make sure we were following our own policies.
And page 65 through 67 will list every item that we were required to provide of what they looked at. So it was pretty detailed documentation wise. And so that is correct. I'm very fortunate again that we had, and Jesse and everyone, all the staff, to have no findings. This was good. But there is significant amount of records that they requested that we looked at. And feel free to look at those pages, and that's all the documents they tested.
They also looked at the season restitution area too. That we remember, if you remember, I told you everything on the right hand side was non-prepaid. They also looked at that too. So it's everything that we reported, they looked at.
Plus seasons.
Yes.
And who determines what audits get to be done or that are done is the audit committee of the Finance Commission. So annually, the external firm that performs the internal audit function brings in a risk assessment, and then the audit committee of the Finance Commission goes through the risk assessment and decides what areas will be looked at. We have two areas a year that are looked at, and then they do a follow-up. So that's when Russell said the last time it was done is 2012, because it had a really low risk. That's why it was 6 years before it came back through in the audit cycle. This one, we just recently got the report, so the Finance Commission Audit Committee hasn't even seen it yet. So at their next meeting, they will get this report. The audit firm will actually come in and present it to them, and then they vote to accept it or reject it.
And so Garza Gonzalez does all of the banking department's internal audit. And like Stephanie said, it's a risk focus, but they give us their scope, and if we think that maybe something has been overlooked, or we think for whatever reason something should be raised to a higher priority, we suggest that to them or the audit committee, and the audit committee makes the final determination. So it's it could be 3 years, 5 years before we go back again to do this. But it's a process that goes through. I guess you'd say it's risk focused primarily would be the best thing to put it. But at some point they will get back to this. So it's in fact, Stephanie, how long has their contract been with us?
I think we've had them. This last contract was for 4 years, and it expires in August. So we have a request for proposal out right now to select an external firm for the next 4 years. And they can bid on it again, but we still go out for bid every 4 years.
Are they a local firm?
No, they're actually San Antonio. Mm-hmm. But they do a lot of government work.
In our, we're not a big agency, so I think they do a lot of smaller agencies, and I'm going to say the people that are interested in bidding for our work, probably not a great amount of firms would be interested in bidding, but there'll be some. So, you know, the big three accounting firms are probably not interested in
that.
This might be a strange question, but how is that paid for? I mean, does that sound
the banking department
pays
pay
for it.
So our assessments to the funeral industry and every other industry that we regulate pays for the cost of the audit.
Well, congratulations. It's always nice to get a good
claim. Yeah. Like
Yeah, you want to go over that one more time, Russell?
NA, none, or anything. I'll take it.
I think that's one of the few that I've ever seen like that. Congratulations.
It's also noted in the summary, the results of our test disclosed that such controls were adequate and no instances of noncompliance were noted.
Okay.
So that's technocrat for great job.
Okay, then collection efforts.
Yes, sir. I will be discussing that, Jesse. So, again, we talked about the C's and restitution funds that are also deposited in the trust funded account. We track those, and we have three areas: the paying, the paid in full, and also the uncollectible, which, you know, we'll go over. The first area is the paying. So we just, this is where we list any contract, or I'm sorry, any individual permit holder or non-permit holder or whatever that has some sort of order against them. Usually it's an agreed order where there's some sort of, and again, typically unlicensed prepaid funeral contracts that are sold. We become aware of them. We go through our process, administrative process. Ultimately, an agreed order is typically issued. Once that is issued, then it comes to, our area, special audits. We monitor that, and we come up with a tracking system. And this is where we list each of the ones that we are currently tracking under the paying section, okay? Again, all of these, you know, if you have any questions, let me know. But for the most part, starting on page 70, okay, that's where I'm discussing there. And then 70 through 73 are the ones that are currently paying and that we're administering. I mean, I think we've discussed most of these at prior meetings, but if anybody has any specific questions, you know, I'll be happy to discuss them. But again, typically there's some sort of order. They mail a check to us. We deposit it in the guarantee fund, and then we track it here, and this is where we have an accounting of what has been paid and any balances owed still, okay? On page 74, that's our only paid in full during this reporting period, and this had to do this had to do with a permit holder that didn't renew its permit on time, even after we told them countless times, called them and everything. But this is where we typically, you know, after some time, we do decide, you know, decisions made, well, maybe we need to do some sort of order to get compliance, and this is one. They paid it in full, so that's the only one we have. And then on page 75 is a few of them that are considered uncollectible. The one I will talk a little bit about is El Paso Mission, because that one is the bigger one. We've referred this to the AG's office, and recently we received notice that the Attorney General's office for Texas has a $406,000 judgment against El Paso Mission and the owner. Now, there's some liens against they have some property, and they're encumbered, so we're not sure if we're ever going to be able to collect those funds. But if we ever do, you know, we'll make sure that we forward those funds to the consumers first, and then anything after that then goes into penalties that they owe us. Our understanding is that there's maybe she's been arrested again recently for some other activity. So that's the one that we're tracking. Maybe it's a test, all of them, but this is one of the bigger amounts that are still owed to us. So once we have those in the collectible, and that happens after we try to collect, nothing happens, then we send it to the AG's office, and maybe the AG's office may or may not be able to, you know, collect the funds depending on what assets they may or may not have. So that's basically how that works.
Are they still in operation?
El Paso Mission, well, I don't know. My understanding is that last time I knew that the funeral home was still open, but not sure if
who's running it
or she had a son. That was kind of a family business, you know, small funeral home, I think the son was somehow running it for a while. But again, I'm not sure right now. They don't have a permit with us anymore, obviously. So now it's an at need situation. So I don't know if the Funeral Service Commission may have, you know, I don't know what they're doing over there.
And right. We provide the Funeral Service Commission with information. So, like, when it comes around to renewals for funeral establishments, mm-hmm. or director's licenses, that they can take that into account when they're making that decision.
What is the success rate of Catch Air dealing with these, collection?
And general on this one? Because
in general,
limited. Because by the time we go, there's sometimes the AG can find some assets that they'll sell, and we can, if it gets to that point. Prior to us, we've collected a lot prior to actually going to the AG. What we're referring to, these are, we've tried and tried, and we refer to the matter to the AG, which may have some more ability to put lien on property and such. Mm-hmm. But prior to that, I'd say good 50-70% that we're able to get consumer funds, because we'll have administrative action against them ourselves. We'll go to hearing. Mm-hmm. We'll get judgments again. Well, I mean, our ability, and sometimes they can sell things. Sometimes we're able to do it. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I wouldn't say 100%, no, but we've had a pretty good success.
Yeah, we do, and we
so
set up.
Is that something that y'all do personally, go after these people?
As far, yes.
As an agency?
Yeah.
We have an administrative process, and, you know, we'll issue our orders, which requires them to do something,
right.
You know. And a lot of these, we set up in payment terms because maybe they don't have the full cash, right? And that's why you'll see on the paying site where all these payments are being made. That's our attempt to collect the funds that are owed, correct?
I'll point you to page 70 for a specific example of that. And you'll see on the bottom where it says Ritter.
Mm-hmm.
We, and it right now, they are current paying back all the money that was misappropriated. We didn't have to refer that matter or anything, so the consumers will get those funds because we took action and or we came to an agreed order, as Jesse indicated earlier. They have agreed to pay us a certain amount per month, and we monitor
right.
that and such. So we are responsible, and that one is current, and I foresee the consumers getting all the money back.
Any questions on anything that I covered on that in this section? All right.
I'll just add as a sort of a side note to that, we just recently went through the sunset review process as well, which is a process where the agency is reviewed again from top to bottom to see if we should still be in existence. And the team from Sunset was really surprised at the amount of time and effort that has to go in to the collection type things that we do. They were like, they kept saying, y'all do that? Y'all do all that? I mean, they were very surprised. I think they thought that we sent that off and let someone else take care of that. But, I mean, there is no one to send it off to. It's our responsibility. So it was an interesting conversation with them.
Well, I'm very appreciative of our staff because from that part, and we notify consumers, we find them, we send checks. So, yeah, we administer that whole process internally.
It's a lot of work.
Well, staff has a lot of work. I just, no. It does. It does. It really is. It
yeah,
does take some effort.
Sounds like
yes,
it.
And time and effort.
Mm-hmm.
All right, what about future meeting dates?
I have it penciled in, Commissioner. This is Russell Reese, Director of Special Audits. And I'm writing a date of Thursday, May 16th, 19th, just because we're picking a date. Trust me, if we normally have to have it sometimes earlier, I'll be glad to let y'all know. But as far as just picking a date right now, that's as good as any, and that's one date before a year that we really should have. And so that's a tentative date. As always, I'll reach out to you. And I'm not, again, knock on wood, that we don't have any other claims over 6,500, which might require us to meet sooner.
What do we determine about telephonic meetings? If we need to
we can do that,
right? Mm-hmm. So if we need to meet earlier, we can pull one of those up. Okay. All right.
And that'll be on the phone, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay, so that is an option.
Yes, if necessary, if in a pinch, mm-hmm. and we can't get y'all together, somebody needs this, you know, $10,000 and we can't approve, we did change the statute several years ago to allow the teleconference meeting if necessary. Yes.
Okay, any other items of interest for the council? Any questions from anybody? Okay, no further business. We conclude the meeting. It is time now is 2:21. Always thank y'all for being